We're so glad that you're here with us.
Remember that one time?
Band camp? Wait, no, sorry, wrong podcast. So, family home evening. We're here to spend some quality time together, get to know each other a little better, tell some probably inappropriate stories that no good Mormon would ever tell.
There's just so many of them.
Only bad Mormons tell the stories we're gonna tell you.
To be fair, I just want to say most Mormons are bad Mormons. They just don't want to admit it. I'm just saying.
I kind of don't think that's true. Like, what do they call them? Jack Mormons?
Well, that's what we are.
Yeah. I feel like that's got to be only like a 2% margin.
Oh, I think a lot of people have left the church. I mean, there's a lot of people that stay in the church, and also the people that are in the church don't tell their stories the way that we tell our
True.
stories.
With unabashed shame. Wait, I was gonna say unabashed shame, but I don't think that's the right way to phrase that. What I meant was no shame and probably a lot of regret later on.
Only when you call me out on it, but really, I'm happy with my life choices. How else do you experience things if you don't experience things?
That's very fair. I have done some stupid shit, though.
Shit. But again, my favorite is like when we go to, let's just say, a wedding that some relatives might be at, and then they kind of pull us aside and be like, "Well, tell you about the one time I got drunk."
That's
And it's
true.
so awesome because you're like, "You're a human being. You make mistakes, you know, I make the mistake every day, but you know, like not everybody is so perfect."
You know, I actually have this funny memory of, well, not like, it's not like a funny memory, but from when we were at Grandma's funeral in the past couple of months. Like, I hadn't seen any of those cousins for ages and years and eons. And there
Right.
was the one cousin who was like, I don't know, she was probably 16 to 18, but she was like super cool and she was goth and
Right, I was
she
like,
was like normal.
right. You're like, oh, that was me at
Yeah.
15.
And I was just like, oh my God, we would actually be friends in
So it
real
was one of our
life.
ki cousins' kids, right?
Yeah, one of our
Yeah.
cousins' kids. Sorry, I
Right.
forget how old I am.
Right. It was like, yeah, I was gonna say not that age unless we got some polygamous family
We've
members.
already covered that,
No, we
but.
did. We haven't t covered it was Tyson's podcast.
Oh, is now the time to
I
cover
don't
it?
know, is it?
No. So, the story that I wanted to tell was. I feel like I'm gonna get in a little trouble for this because. And the fact that I'm like on the verge of 45 years old and I'm feeling guilt about telling this story tells you something.
The deep-seated bullshit.
Psychological
Yeah.
trauma that was inflicted on me. But yeah, I feel like I'm about to divulge some really secret shit that I'm not allowed to say, and there's a part of me that's like, what are you doing? You're gonna offend people. You're gonna hurt people's feelings. And it's like, oh wait, hold on. Do you even remember who you are? Anyways, I'm gonna tell you guys the story of doing baptisms for the dead. I don't
Is it
think.
as spooky as it
I
sounds?
don't even think this is a story that you have heard.
I've never heard it, which is why I'm really excited.
Fabulous. So, let's go.
So to our three cousins that don't like us anymore, turn it off. Switch it off.
Like a light
It
switch.
goes click.
Okay.
Okay.
So, I want to say 13 years old because I feel like that's the age that I was when I left the church, and this is what led up to me having the conversation that made me leave the church. So, I'm going to go with 13. And let me just set the scene for you. So, the house that we grew up in,
Now a college dorm
it's like a
room type
dorm house.
thing.
But that was our childhood home, and it's at the base of the hill where the Logan Temple sits. So the view that we had as kids growing up was this just impressive, gigantic temple on top of a hill in the middle of a very like low income, moderate housing type of situation. And that did not seem in any way strange to me or weird. And I think about it now and I'm like, what the fuck kind of weird shit is that to have, like, this just grand, statuesque, giant temple looming over these, like, poor people? Anyway, I digress. So that was our view, right, as we were growing up, is this just, we lived in the shadow of this gigantic, magnificent temple. And also, there were bats that would circle the two bell towers at night. I remember that in the summers, in August, so you could see the bats flying around. That was cool. Anyways, so the temple was like this, basically, it's as a part of my childhood existence as anything else in the world. That's a part of my being. That's a part of my childhood.
As somebody who didn't really go to church myself, I actually have a painting of that temple in my bedroom. It might be behind my dresser, but when we go to Logan back to visit, I'm like, oh, look, a painting of the temple. Gotta buy it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not like the temple, the significance of the temple wasn't religious in any way. It was just my memory and my existence growing up. It was just a part of my neighborhood, like my childhood memories. Right. It wasn't like a religious symbol to me. It was just like that was a thing that was part of my neighborhood or whatever. So anyways, so baptisms for the dead. Let's get to the good stuff. You might be wondering, what the fuck is a baptism for the dead? It's exactly what it sounds like. You basically, so when you're baptized to the church, this is the part where I'm like, I'm telling secrets, I'm not allowed to tell. So when you get baptized in the church, you dress all in white, and you go into a fountain, and you have somebody who holds
Mine was a jacuzzi.
Well, whatever. It's water. It's water. It's a pool. It's a lake. It's a fountain. If you're my
fountain would have been badass. I had a freaking jacuzzi.
If you're my cousin Tyson, you'd take people to a pool at a motel.
Which mine was a tabernacle.
You know what I'm saying? So anyways, you have a body of water, and you are basically dunked under the water by somebody who's holding the magic power, which they call the priesthood, and it's usually your dad, so that's why I feel a little guilty.
Oh, yeah, no, dad totally baptized me.
Yeah, and so they dunk you under, and every single hair, every single eyelash has to go under the water.
If your skirt flies up, you gotta do it again.
Right. So, is that the thing you do when you're 8 years old?
When I was 12.
Yeah, so that basically makes you a member of the... At that moment, you're dunked. You become a member of the church, right?
Right, and I think that the theory is, like, Catholics do it when you're a baby. So that way, if you die or something happens, then your soul is saved. But for Mormons, they wait until you're 8, because then that you're old enough to make that choice for yourself, which is complete and utter bullshit, because you're 8 and you are going to do what your parents tell you to do.
Because
you're 8 years old. Again, I was 12. I did it because Grandma said I would get a party. And I was like, I love parties. And I got a present. And then my present was just a journal. And I still have it to this day, to be fair. But like this is all I got? This is bullshit, Grandma. But I did. I knew it was important to my dad. But to be fair, it was all bullshit. So, go on.
So, yeah. So, that's the premise of the baptism. The Mormon baptism. So, baptisms for the dead is basically where you take a human being and you baptize them in the name of someone that's died, which doesn't sound too creepy until you see it in practice, because the people who are getting baptized for the dead are young preteen 13-year-olds like myself, Mandy, as a child in that temple.
T-shirt contest.
Well, no, it wasn't like that. I mean, we had to wear, like, the clothes that you wear are very stiff, like, heavy linen fabric. I don't know how to explain it, but it's heavy, and it's heavy when it's dry, and it's really heavy when it's wet. And, like, I was always bigger. Like, as soon as I, like, hit puberty, I got super fat, and so I didn't even fit, like, the dresses. I had to wear the pants or whatever. But this is what I remember about going in there. So you might have heard us talk about my mom's Wiccan phase that she went through with the crystals and the whatevers and the whatnots, which I was all about as a preteen / teenager.
Pentagrams. Mm-hmm.
So I had a necklace that I'd gotten from my mother. I'm pretty sure I'd gotten it from my mother. I don't know where else I would have gotten it at 13. But it was a pentagram. It was a silver pentagram, which is a 5-pointed star inside of a circle, which is a Wiccan witchcraft thing, on a silver chain, and I would wear it all the time. And so I went to the church with my, like, young women's youth group or whatever. And we went into the locker room, into the church, into the temple. So we've gone into this temple, which is this grand thing that's been in my neighborhood my entire...
And mind you, you cannot go to the temple unless you have a temple recommend. Like, it's kind of a big deal. Like, you can't just be, like, as a tourist, be like, I would like to go into the temple and see what that is about. As somebody who was... Again, part of a Mormon family, but I never went to church. I have never been inside of that temple. And it is very much, you know, when I go to Utah to visit my dad, I roll outside and I'd play outside of the temple, but I was never allowed to go inside.
Yeah, we couldn't go to our brother's wedding.
Right, because by the time my brother got married, and he married a very nice Mormon girl that we all love very dearly, but none of us got to go to the wedding because none of us were going to get a temple recommend because none of us were going to go to church.
Right. So anyway, this statuesque temple that had been looming over me my entire existence, you know, suddenly I'm going inside of it to do this baptisms for the dead with my young women's group or whatever. So we go into, there's a locker room. We go into the locker room, we put our clothes and all of our belongings into the locker, and then we change into these really, like I said, heavy, white, starchy clothes. And
was it a dress or pants?
Mine was pants. Most of the girls wore dresses, but for some reason, like, I couldn't fit in the dress. I was too big. And so I had pants for some reason, is what I remember. That could be wrong. I don't know. It was very traumatic. But so we put all of our things in there, and then we went, and it was basically, if I remember correctly, there was maybe 12 of us or so. And we all stood in a line, and there was this big, ornate, you know, white tiled fountain, and there was one man in there who would, you know, there's like steps that went up to the fountain and then steps where you'd step down into the water, and there's one man in there who was baptizing you for the dead. So you would, there's a line of 12 kids, all about my age, you know, 10 to 14, and we would, you had to be baptized yourself, so it had to be older than 8, which is crazy. So you would wait, and then the guy would call your name, and then you would go into the, step into the fountain, and then he would say, whatever the words were, I can't remember, but I baptize you in the name of Dunk Adolf Hitler, you know, I baptize you in the name of Charles Manson. I'm saying the worst names. These are the names that come to my head. I haven't really twisted mine.
But they would
do 10 in a row.
So in a row.
Yeah. I baptize you in the name of blank. Dunk. I baptize you in the name of Les Claypool. Dunk. I baptize you in the name of Matt Skiba. Dunk.
So essentially, they are baptizing these souls against their will.
Well, I mean, exactly. It's just dead people. It's registers of dead people. And so it's like, dunk, dunk, dunk. And so you get dunked 10 times, right? I baptize you in the name of Dunk. You get dunked 10 times, and then you get out, and you're disoriented, and you walk to the edge of the fountain, and chlorine. You get out. It's chlorining, yep. And then you get in line, in the back of the line again, and you wait your turn, and then you get in and you do 10 more. And you do that about 10 times. So as a 13-year-old kid, I baptized, by proxy, about 100 dead people. You know? In a single day. And then there was a line of,
I don't know. How often do you do that?
I don't know, because that was the only time I've ever done it. And let me tell you why. So I did the thing I was supposed to do. You know, I left, you know, we got dressed, we, you know, put our street clothes back on, we left the temple, and I was immediately called into the bishop's office to explain myself and explain why I had a symbol of Satan hanging in my locker as I'm baptizing the dead. Yes, is there a question?
I have a question. Sorry, I'm raising my hand. Isn't there a pentagram in the temple? Like, we've all gazed upon the temple, and we've seen some weird-ass shit that is embedded into the temple, and I believe there is a pentagram in there.
Like Masonic symbols?
I don't know about that, but maybe.
Yeah, there is, and I asked that question.
Oh, sorry. Go on.
I was questioned. I was pulled out, and I was questioned. So little did I know that while I was performing these baptisms for dead people, that somebody was going through my stuff in a locker.
Fuck that.
Right?
Shit.
Right? And I'm, like, just at the age of 13. Like, I'm just beginning.
Such a fragile age at that age. Mm-hmm. I mean.
And I'm just beginning to, like, start to form my own ideas. And you got to imagine, like, my dad is working hard. He's, like, working overnights. Yeah. He he's doing everything he can to just, like, make money because he has a ton of fucking kids, right? Right. And my mom is in this phase of Wicca and witchcraft and, you know, I want to say, like, I'm very impressionable and, like, I'm kind of following what my mom's doing. I don't want to blame it on her because I thought it was super fucking cool and I still think it's kind of super fucking cool. But, you know, that's where I got that from with my mother. You know what I mean?
Well, and we never want to be fair, like, even doing this podcast, we don't want to embarrass Dad. Like, we might embarrass Mom, and you know what? She'll get over it.
We might embarrass each other. We'll probably embarrass a lot of our family.
I'll probably embarrass myself multiple times.
But we're willing to make that sacrifice for you guys. I just want to make it clear that, like, I'm a 13-year-old kid. I didn't just pull this off of MTV.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I got this from somewhere. So, and I really honestly, obviously, as an adult, don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think it's super cool and a very kind of cool pacifist religion that people are into. And God bless them. Like, that's great. Whatever you want to do. But so, anyways, back to the story. So I'm called into the bishop's office to explain why I have a pentagram hanging in the blessed, sacred Logan temple. You know, which I don't remember exactly the conversation, but I do remember saying, because there was a big star on the side of the temple that was in a circle. So I remember saying, like, well, isn't that kind of like what this is? And I do remember saying that as kind of being a smartass at the time. Like, I knew that that wasn't the intention because it wasn't a Wiccan symbol. But I was just like, well, like, fuck you, man. Like, your symbols are Mason symbols and... You know, it's whatever. It's back to the pagan times. And I'm paraphrasing, obviously. But so then I started asking those questions, you know, and I was like, and that somebody had just told me about that whole fucking bullshit verse in, I don't know if it was the Doctrine and Covenants or some, basically some passage of one of those Mormon books that was like, basically just talking shit about people with black skin and talking about how they were beasts of the field and they were... It was a lot of horrible shit that I don't want to get into again, but that really, like, struck a nerve with me, and I was like, well, what about this? Like, this seems fucked up to me. In 13-year-old speak, I didn't use the language that I use now as a professional lady. But, you know, I was like, what's up with this? And they're like, Mandy, you know, you just have to have faith. You just have to have faith. And I was like, well, what about, you know, I know I've told this story a little bit in another episode of the podcast, but... Essentially, it was like, I kept asking these questions that were like, this doesn't make sense to me. This doesn't make sense to me. This doesn't make sense to me. And I kept getting back like, you have to have faith. You have to have faith. And I was like, I don't have any faith. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not getting a straight answer. Like, I have a very, I don't want to say like I'm super smart by any means, but I have a very like analytical, scientific leaning mind. And if I don't have some sort of evidence or some sort of proof, like, I'm not just gonna believe in fairy tales because somebody tells me to fucking believe in them. Right. You know, like, I'm not, my brain doesn't work that way. And so I was not having it. And that, at that moment, actually, was when I decided to leave the church. And what led up to that was doing the baptisms for the dead.
Right.
That's the story. That's the whole story.
That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because the first time I ever heard about baptism for the dead was when Mitt Romney was running for president, and his wife's father, who's a predominant scientist, I can't remember his name, but very much an atheist, got baptized. Not, he was dead, like, baptized the dead for him. Right, and I'm like, what in the actual fuck? You can't do that. That's like, to me, is such a betrayal. Like, especially if you're atheist, you don't really believe there's a soul or any sort of afterlife anyway. So can you really even be that offended? But I was. Because I go back between being atheist to agnostic to being like, I don't know what the fuck. There's something bigger than me. I don't know what the fuck it is. I still go by the rule of just be a decent human being and you'll be fine.
Yeah, like, don't be an asshole. Care about other people.
Right, exactly.
Give a shit about somebody besides yourself.
100%. And again, don't do things because you think it's going to benefit you later in the afterworld. do it because you want to better your neighborhood or your relationships with your friends. Like,
could you imagine, just for a moment, could you imagine what would happen if we took all of our resources, like, take all the resources that the top billionaires are hoarding. There's, what, like 13 of them that have all the wealth.
Right.
Like, imagine what we could do if instead of fucking funding the military and strikes in this country and strikes in that country and everybody, you know, stockpiling whatever, like, we could advance our society so far if we would just all work together. And it's going to take, like, some sort of, like, a flipping of a switch in the brains of, like, the majority of people.
We've already been so conditioned. And me, 100, I like to argue on the internet. I'm 100% that person who's been brainwashed into being like, I need to fight for the rights of all my brothers. It's not about me. It's about fighting for my neighbors and making sure that we all have equal rights and awesomeness, which is legitimate, right? But at the end of the day, they just keep us fighting with each other so that they can keep taking all the money.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, imagine what we could do if we worked together. Like, if everybody worked together, like, we could go to fucking space. We could create energy, like, new energy sources. Like,
well, that's the thing, is that those advancements have been made, and they got squashed by people who bought them at, like, well, I don't know. Yeah, and it's just like, when, yeah, no, I mean,
we could, now, this is a political podcast now. We've changed directions. We're done talking about ancient fairy tale religions, and now we've moved on to hard science.
Well, you know what? Donald Trump.
Real science.
Is fluent in Japanese, and then, now I'm going astro.
No, quantum.
Quantum physicist.
Yeah, I heard that. I heard that on the internet. QAnon told me that.
Right, and everybody knows QAnon, knows the deep red state, or deep state, or whatever the shit it is.
Pedophile tunnels.
Because he's not part of the pedophiles, because he's only best friends with Elon. No, wrong guy.
Elon Musk?
Yeah, but...
Jeffrey Epstein. Ghislaine
Maxwell. Have some more wine.
Who hung herself in her cell tomorrow?
Tomorrow, right.
I feel like we're getting sidetracked. What were we talking about?
Baptism for the dead.
Baptisms for the dead, yeah. Oh. Yeah, that was, I have this adult fascination, and you can see it in a lot of the tattoos on my body, with mashing up pop culture and religion. I'm super fascinated by religion of all types, because it's just so, like, there's a common thread through all the religions, and there's so much fucked up bullshit in all the organized religions. Like, there's no, like, they all kind of have it down a little bit, and it's all the same. But it's like they all have their own fucking version of it that has to make them the best and everybody else the worst. And that's the problem. And it seems so obvious to me. But I don't understand why people can't get that.
Well, so for me, and without going into a super long podcast, but Mom was always, you know, she was Wiccan for a bit, but she ended up, you know, going back to the Mormon religion. And by the time, yeah, so I had to have been, because I didn't try acid until I was 15, so I was probably 16, because I had done it a couple times at this point. But I went over to my best friend's house, and we had done some drugs, and we were having a good time. And I don't know if you guys remember the juice man with his big fucking eyebrows, and he would just juice every, it is an infomercial.
Oh yeah, the death of a heart attack.
Oh, did he? Okay. Yeah. So the juice man was on, and I was like, he is the devil. He's saying, like, I was just convinced of it. And my friend Patrick was just like, who's also very high. You're welcome. Sorry, parents. But was just like, he is the devil. And I'm like, yeah, he's a fucking devil. So then we went to go smoke cigarettes in the backyard, and we started talking about religion and, you know, like, it never dawned, because Casey at this point had been atheist for a while, and I was like, his poor soul, like, God save him, kind you of were? A thing. A little bit. I mean, I definitely was never going down the Mormon train, like, ever, but Mom was so, like, let's hold, like,
religious.
She would literally read the Bible over me while I slept. I'm not even fucking joking. I wake up, and she'd be reading the Bible to me, like, she was just... Because, and it's true, you listen to shit while you sleep, and it will, like, ingrained in your brain, or that's not the word, but you like it's in there.
Subliminal.
Like, exactly. So that's what she was doing. She was trying to save my soul. But, like, I remember one time, this is super embarrassing, so I can't believe I'm even saying it, was we'd hold hands and pray. It was, like, me and Richard, and I think maybe even Valerie was there. I'm not sure. We were in Mission Viejo. And Mom was praying out loud, and I would just mouth the words she was saying because I felt like I was, like, getting into it or whatever. And, like, Richard and Valerie, one of those two guys, were making fun of me for doing it, right? And rightfully so. And Mom was like, don't you make fun of her. She's, like, feeling the spirit. Or whatever. I was like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I just, right? But anyway, so I was fairly, like, again, not religious, because I never really believed in a religion, but I didn't know that at the time. I was just following whatever the hell Mom was doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Same as me.
Right. And, but, like,
man, parents have a lot of power over their kids. Totally.
So I knew Mom had, you know, an affinity towards religion, and I decided that I also did. But it wasn't until I did acid that night that I was like, wait a second, God doesn't exist.
Wait, you discovered anti-religion while you were on acid?
Absolutely.
High five, sister.
And that's why you do drugs.
That's why you do drugs.
But like, and I would have thought that maybe that was just the thought that I had while I was high, but coming off of it, it just made too much sense. Like, so first we were talking about the devil. And then we're like, well, so how did religion even become a thing? Like, I never really thought that there was, like, wrath and fire and people experienced those things, because it just never really...
It started out with people getting fucking high on mushrooms in the woods.
Maybe. Or what my acid trip went down was, people aren't following the rules of decent society. So if you make a religion saying, yeah, I might not catch you, but God always sees everything, then that's a way to keep people down, right?
That's what it turned into. Honestly, I think what it started out at, like, if you look at Celtic or pagan religions, like, back in the day, it was, like, a lot of fucking half-naked, you know, people banging each other with orgies in the desert, like, right. Taking mushrooms and shit and just loving the earth. And somebody realized that they could control people by using that premise, and that's when it turned dark. And then that's when people started getting murdered over it, and when they started trying to control populations over it. Like, that's when the idea of, like, a higher power, or which would have been nature or the moon in the past, you know what I mean? Like, that's what the higher power was, the sun. Right. That turned into something dark and something used to control and manipulate people by assholes that really, we gotta figure out a way to manipulate that gene out of our society.
Right. Well, then it dawned on me too. I'm just like, oh, yeah, the fact that man is so great and man, blah, it's just like, it's all geared towards men being the greatest. I don't think we talked about what we were drinking.
Well, don't lose your train of thought.
Okay. Well, your glass was empty. Okay, we're drinking thought. A Kirkland Signature Blend Vintage 2018 Cabernet Sauvignon from a box. So as we were starting to become more sober, it was time for Patrick to drive me home. And probably still wasn't a great idea, but, you know, he didn't live that far. But as we were driving home, I remember looking out the window going, these poor souls. Everybody is being completely manipulated by a religion that is complete and utter bullshit and its whole purpose is to manipulate you. And that was me at 15, 16.
Well, and think about this, too. Like, and the irony is not lost on me. Think about how many different religions there are in the world that you don't know shit about.
Because,
like,
they don't teach you.
Well, of course they don't teach you. Because that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, the people who are Muslim, who are so devoted to that religion... The people,
it's 'cause they don't know any better.
Well, that it's the same thing, though. It's Mormons. It's, you know, the Quran and the, you know, Israel and Palestine. And, you know, basically there are so many fervent and fanatic followers of each and every religion that in a bad way.
Right.
You know, and that, I don't know, it just speaks volumes to me. Like, there's something wrong with organized religion in that sense, and that's it.
Well, and of the last couple, so, like, I said I was atheist for a while, and then I was like, no, I'm just agnostic. Like, again, I don't get what's going on in the world and the universe and all that shit, but something bigger than me. But I'd be an idiot to say that I know full well there's nothing out there, right?
You know what's so interesting to me? When you die, you lose, what is it, 7 ounces?
Of energy, right?
Well, they don't know. It's right. Just like you weigh a thing and then you die and then you weigh a little bit less. And like, I don't know, that has always been so interesting to me. And I feel like it's because, I don't even know if I should say this, so I'm gonna take a pause in case we have to edit this out. But I saw, when I was living in San Francisco, I saw a man die.
Right.
And it was horrible.
Motorcycle accident.
Motorcycle accident, yeah. Like my very good friend, she was like turning left, you know, crossing the lane into a parking space, and this motorcycle was going really fast, like, I don't know, 60 to 80 miles an hour. And he was kind of coming over a hill, and to where he had a blind spot where he couldn't see anything. So he definitely should have been going that fast, and she didn't see anyone coming as she was making that turn because he was going so fast.
Anyways, wait, your friend was in the accident?
My friend, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, my very good friend. And so this guy slammed into the side of her car and died right there in the road.
His shoes fell off, right?
Yeah, I don't remember shoes. I remember the glove was stuck on the windshield of her car. It was horrifying. And me and two of my good friends were, like, right there on the ground, like, holding his hand. I was holding it onto his hand, and I was looking in his eyes, and I was like, you know, you're going to be okay. Hold on, you're going to be okay. And you could just see, like, there was no physical change in his eyes as he died, but something changed. Like, and I can't explain it, and that that really resonates with me with that whole, like, losing the 7 ounces or whatever it is, because it was like, you know, you imagine, like, oh, the pupils are getting smaller in the eyes as the soul drains out of your body.
Right.
But it wasn't like that at all. Like, nothing physically changed. There was nothing nothing I could perceive. No, the pupils didn't get smaller or bigger. Like, there was nothing. But you could see the life leaving his body.
Oh, my God, that's fucking horrific.
Yeah, it was really, really insane. I mean, and at the time, it wasn't too horrible because... And this sound, I don't know if this sounds really shitty to say, which is why I made the pause in the beginning, in case we have to delete it, but...
Pause again.
Yeah, pause. But, like, I felt good being there with him, because, like, everyone's gonna die. We're all gonna die.
And we all die alone.
And we all die alone. But, like, I felt good about, like, being there with him in that moment.
So he wasn't completely by himself.
Yeah, like, he knew that there were people there around him, and, you know, not everybody has that luxury.
Right.
And I, who knows? I mean, it was probably just, like, my comfort, because I'm the one who's alive, and I'm the one who still has the memory of that. Like, that person's gone, and whatever. And I didn't even know that person at all.
Right.
But, like, I don't know. There was something that wasn't horrible being a part of that experience. And, you know, I kind of feel like maybe there was some lesson in that I was supposed to learn or something. But, I don't know. There was something about it that was... just very interesting that, like, you could see in his eyes, nothing else in his body, but just in his eyes, that, like, he was alive 1 minute, and then it was just, like...
It's like a dim...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was not light, it was not color, it was not size, right. You know what I mean?
You can't explain what it was, it was just,
like,
something different.
Some quantum fucking weird-ass shit.
Well, I'd say, because that's what changed my perspective on even going from... agnostic to kind of, again, that quantum physics, the string theory thing, which I can only very barely grasp the whole of that.
Yeah,
but I read an article about a man who, and I can't even remember what caught my eye about the article that I read, it was that he was a jogger and he had gone running and that he just felt really tired and he just needed to rest his head. And, of course, I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember the whole article, and I wish I would have saved it because I would love to go back and read it again. So, hey, if we have a comment section, I don't know how this shit works. If anybody knows what the shit I'm talking about, put the link down there. But it was that he'd gotten really tired and that he just needed to just lay his head down for just a second. So he found a park bench and he laid his head down. But then he heard a siren of like a policeman or whatever. He's like, oh shit, they're gonna think I'm some drunk guy, I better get up and run. So he got up and he ran away, and then he hid himself. And again, it starts being disassociative and doesn't make sense. He's like, so I hid myself behind a bench, and I was just in a dark, warm place, and I was so just so comfortable and so content. And he's like, oh, it was better than sex. Like, it was, everything about it was just so wonderful. And he's like, oh, but then these dogs came and they tore my body. And then it was like he was behind like a billboard or something. And again, maybe that was just the way I read it. But like these dogs had pulled his body out from the billboard and started digging at his chest. And he's like, God, leave me alone. I just want to go back to my comfortable place. So then he goes back to his comfortable place. He's like, he goes back and he hides his body back again. And he goes back to the warm, dark, comfortable place. And he's just so happy. But these fucking dogs keep coming and digging at his chest. And then he hears the words, stay with me. And he's a first responder. So he knows what that means. He's like, these motherfuckers aren't going to leave me alone until I deal with them. And then I can go back to my warm, comfortable place that I just want to go back to so badly. And then he comes to, and it's not dogs at him, and he's not behind a billboard. He's still at that bench where he put his head down. He had a heart attack, and he died. And they brought him back with the defibrillators or whatever, and that's what the digging at the chest was. And he just says, he's not depressed. He's not longing for death, but he also has nothing to live for. Mm-hmm. He knows how nice it is on the other side, and he wants, and you want to go back there, but you also don't want to leave every, you know, like, he, the way he described it was, he's just like, oh, you just, whereas when you're younger or you're, before you experience this, you have goals and ambitions. You don't really have that anymore once this happens to you, because you're like, well, fuck it, if I just die tomorrow, then it's not so bad. And so that changed, I was like, well, fuck, I mean, that's really cool. So again, your energy goes somewhere. Your consciousness is still kind of there. I don't know how much it is there. And then I got into the whole, like, universe thing. And now that's kind of an avenue I've been going
down. My current boss, who BT dubs is the fucking shit, and I can't tell the world enough about how much I love him. Anyways, he told me a very similar story. Because he had a near-death experience. And
oh, he was the one who experienced it?
Yeah, himself. Oh, and he told me, like, as I was telling him, like, I got to go to my grandma's funeral, he was like, hey, let me just share this with you. And it was very similar to that. And it was just like, you know, well, I don't want to, like, share his story, but
right. It
was very similar to that. And I was like, that's crazy to hear that firsthand from somebody. But you know what I think that is? I think that is, so you've heard about the DMT.
Yeah, you've told me. Don't ruin my fucking dreams, Mandy. Life can be good on the other side, and I need to believe that.
I'm just saying this is one possible scenario, is that, you know, your brain, so DMT, it's a, you know, chemical that, you know, people are, like, using it as a recreational drug, but apparently you have a little, like, gland in your brain that has a big reserve of that. And that is released into your brain when you die. And that's what causes these feelings of euphoria and, like, basically makes it a calming experience for you when you die rather than a traumatic, horrible experience that the people who are still alive and seeing what's happening are experiencing. There's actually a really cool documentary on Netflix that came out a few years ago that I highly recommend. DMT's in the title. It's like the spirit molecule, I think is what it's called, but it's really fascinating. And people take DMT for recreational use.
So you can feel that more than one time then?
Well, here's the thing. According to the documentary, like, I don't know, strike that, I know one person who's taken it and they say that it's amazing and that you can't take enough of it and it's always great every time you take it. But according to this documentary, basically, there's a lot of people who take it once and they can't feel happiness again. They can't, because they've experienced the, like, maximum amount of euphoria that it's just basically ruined.
Well, they say that about, like, ecstasy, too. If you take too much of it, you use up your dopamine, right?
Which is fucking bullshit, by the way. But, but according to this thing, and it's probably the same propaganda or whatever.
Right.
Because, like, the guy that I talked to,
because God knows that would be amazing. You'd want to do it every weekend kind of a thing.
Exactly. And that, I was really curious to try it.
I don't want
to
try it.
Anyways, Spirit Molecule, check it out. The documentary is very informative and entertaining, and I highly, highly believe that there is that's what happens when you die.
I 100% believe that, too. But again, you lose 7 ounces. I have to believe there's some sort of afterlife, because, well, I guess I don't have to believe shit. But it'd just be nice if there was something.
It would be nice. We're not That's just what the fucking whole Mormon religion is.
I don't
want to
be
worm.
Yeah, but I'm not going down that road. I don't want to be worm food. I would like to think, and I don't want to be a ghost that hangs out. I don't know.
Hello. You're gonna die someday. But if you let us in, we'll show you there's another way.
I think we're gonna get sued by Trey Parker.
That's one bar.
We also did a little bit of Turn It Up.
Maybe if we invite them to be guests on our podcast.
Dude, I've always thought they were the coolest dudes.
Would that be?
And they did acid on a red carpet.
We could take acid together.
I don't think I ever want to do acid again. I will do mushrooms,
though. I don't either. I'm too old to do acid.
I hate acid. The last time I did it, I think I was 17 years old. And that was enough for me. Yeah, but we're going to cut a lot of shit out.
You know what? I think this has been a very productive and informative podcast. What do you think?
Yeah, let's call it.
Let's remember the lessons that we've learned tonight as we reflect on our family home evening.
Don't follow religions blindly.
Don't just believe anything anyone tells you.
If your parents tell you something, they're probably wrong.
And also question authority.
Constantly.
Always question authority. Yeah, just don't blindly follow anyone. Ask questions. Right. Make your own decisions.
And when their go-to response is, you just need to have faith, fuck yourself.
Yeah, like, tell them to fuck off and go get yourself a Coke and a cigarette at Angie's.
Coffee.
A coffee with a shit ton of sugar and a shit ton of cream, a cigarette and a cinnamon roll.
Go get yourself an echinacea tea, because apparently that's also not okay. That's ridiculous.
Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate you spending your evening with us at Family Home Evening.
We'll see you on the next one, friends.